This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com and your host for a show that takes place in the mellow regions of the international break. The international breaks are back. Joining me to discuss Villa, including the Arsenal game and where we stand now on the sexiest Aston Villa podcast. You'll have to take our word for that, because it is an audio-only event. Joining me, Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw, and the return of Mr. Dan Rogers. Welcome
Hello,
back.
Hello, sir.
Hello, everyone. Hello, my Villa chums. Cheer up, Christopher.
Cheer up, Bird.
I am cheery.
Christopher. Oh, hello.
Hello to you too.
Cheer up, Mr. Bird.
I am cheery. I am positively...
He doesn't sound it, does he, Mr. Shaw?
No.
Help me out here.
I think we need to replace him. I've got just the man he's been asking to come on this show.
Denied.
Right. What's on the agenda? We'll obviously catch up with the latest Villa news. Yes, we will have to go over that Arsenal game. I think it's potentially an interesting one to discuss in terms of that, and the Hammers game was very much a, to quote my favourite term, a litmus test to see where we are in the world. And then we'll have a little sauté through the media Muppets to see if the old battery hens are up to anything this week before going into the 3 points and beyond. How are you, Mr. Rogers? Long time no speak.
Well, Corona finally got me.
It finally got me.
And despite my having, you know, a shield and an immunity built from many years inhaling the vapours from the Villa Park urinal troughs, it finally permeated. And February was a write-off. I would describe it as, a similar feeling to the Paul Lambert years throughout.
28 days later.
Yes, but I'm back and back with a vengeance.
Good man. So how long were you down and out for? The whole month, did you say?
Yeah, it was not a good experience. And moments of, a bit like the Paul Lambert years, in that there were false dawns, many false dawns. And then I'd have a Bradford City. And
you know what we'd say about that game? Happen. Never mention
didn't
it.
Happen. Didn't happen.
Didn't happen. Never mention it.
Yeah, but I had the resurgence of Aston Villa to keep me alive. And of course, you're fine. Dulcet tones on the airwaves.
And how's the new social media influencer, Chris Bird?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, I kept him quiet there. He's a bit cagey.
Come on, Chris,
you've
got a new album coming. This is your opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. This is your opportunity. I'm just setting you
still
up.
Still can't
here.
Even get the fucking thing finished.
Oh, we'll revisit that one next month.
I'll let you know, I'll put it off.
Phil Shaw, quickly, because the fans want us to get talking about Villa. They're not interested in our petty little lives.
No, just keep going. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. I'm all right. Don't worry about me. I'm fine.
Well, how passive-aggressive is that? Don't worry about me. I'm fine.
I'm fine. Yeah, I'm saving my passive-aggressiveness for Arsenal.
Right, okay.
How about you, David? How are you, more importantly?
Don't talk about me.
I'm fine.
Well, I tell you what, gents, it's good to be back. God, you guys wait till the Russians arrive. God, you'll be
that's what I'm waiting for. Anyway, let's move on. Before we start, a thank you to the supporters of this episode, Free Trade. As you know, if you're a regular listener of My Old Man Said, rather than have gambling adverts on this podcast, we prefer our listeners to invest in their long-term wealth to help achieve their goals. And Free Trade is an app that I use, and I was attracted to it just through its simplicity and the fact that it's commission-free. And you can actually run your portfolio from your mobile phone. If you sign up with My Old Man Said via freetrade.io/moms, the link will be in the show notes. You get a free share from the value of £3 to £200 up until this weekend, the end of Sunday, the 27th of March. The minimum share value will actually be £10. So you can sign up via the app, and once you fund your account before Sunday, that will guarantee the minimum amount will be at least £10. Put it this way, if you get in the market now, you're getting in at a much better position than I did a year ago. As with all investments, your capital is at risk and the value of your portfolio can go down as well as up. Do check out Free Trade. The app is both on the Apple App Store and also Google Play as well. And once again, it's freetrade.io/moms. I think it's time for some news. Shall we talk about Miley Cyrus's plane to Paraguay being struck by lightning, or the Villa news?
I mean, it's different to arriving on the back of a wrecking ball, but let's go with the Villa news.
Oh, there's one of those. There's one of those coming through.
Chris came in like a wrecking ball. That's
why. You should contact Villa and say, look, we know the North
You're
Stand.
You're going to use me to knock the North Stand down.
Summer 23. We know there's one place on the wrecking ball. Can I take it, please?
What a way
I need it for some social media influencer pictures.
How did Bud die?
TikTok video
as
well.
He got broken by getting smashed through a kazoo sign. Brilliant.
You got a new album launch coming up. I mean, you swinging nude on a wrecking ball in the halftime entertainment. You need to get onto your people.
Yeah. Say there's an opportunity there with this North Stand being knocked down. Put the album back as a year. Summer 23, Wrecking Ball.
Noted.
It's got to happen. Speaking of Miley Cyrus, I was in a sushi restaurant about 6 weeks ago in America. When she was there, I saw her, and it was her sister's birthday. So there's the connection. But she's still alive, by the way. The plane got hit by lightning, had to make an emergency landing. But anyway, you were elected for the Villa News. Mr. Lucas Dean seems to be, he's back, isn't he? We thought he was written off by the tone of that Villa social media.
Come back stronger.
Come back stronger. That's like, oh, he's gone for 6 months at least.
Back stronger already. But he's running about for the French squad. Fine.
Couldn't get out of Villa quick enough, could he?
Yeah, so he might be on the pitch in their second game. So we shall see. But he should be back.
He'll be back for
against
Wolves.
Against the Dogheads, won't he?
Yep.
Potentially. Nakamba, he'll also be back in full training. Potentially at some point we could have actually a whole full squad to choose from.
Surely not.
For the first time this season, in the final embers of the season.
Just when we don't need it. Thanks for that, Villa.
Yeah, meanwhile, Chris Budd's favourite player, is it Arogbanen?
He's a good player.
He signed a 5-year deal. I mean, he's got a path there. If he is good,
yeah.
He's definitely got a path, because that's an area that we not only do you want, let's say, a first teamer, but you want a bit of depth there as well.
Mm. Gerrard's made it quite public, hasn't he, that he likes him.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in international call-ups, Ollie Watkins managed to sneak in there at the 11th hour to join Tyrone Mings in the England squad. Obviously, John McGinn's off with the Scots, Lucas Dean with the French. What happened with Buendia and Martinez? I thought they were banned.
They've still travelled, haven't they? They've just gone to train and have a bit of banter and a bit of a holiday.
Sounds like it.
Team bonding for the World Cup.
Something like that.
Martinez loves the Argentinian setup, so it's going to be hard to keep him away.
And they're all walking around like with their, is it Mate, that the drink they all have.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. I remember every time I used to interview Viggo Mortensen, he of On the Road, Lord of the Rings fame, he would always have a mate on the go.
Right.
And he would always used to wear, I can't remember the team now, but always used to wear this Argentinian club football shirt as well when he did his interviews.
Forgive me, what is this mystical thing you speak of, this mate? Can you get it at Villa Park? Or?
Unfortunately, not yet.
But yeah, I mean, come on, we've got two Argentinian players.
It's
they
like
should
a,
be getting
it's
it
like
in
a
there.
Tea, basically.
Yeah. Which you kind of suck through this strange looking medieval cup, this kind of metal straw.
I'm sold on it already.
I used to have a flatmate who used to drink it all the time as well. And yeah, actually, he was born in Argentina as well.
Make it happen. Be better than a Capri Sun, wouldn't it?
Commemorative cups. First of all, love it.
Yeah, I want more choice than a Capri Sun, a Bovril, or some watered-down Heineken. Can you imagine, Holt End, 22,000, everybody sipping at their little...
Slurping at the same time.
Mate straws.
People would come to... Oh, the disdain. It would be like the pit. West Ham with the popcorn.
No, but I think it would be cooler. It would be like something to be seen, especially if we're all wearing flat caps or something. Anyway, we move on.
Sorry.
Flat caps and mate.
That's completely my fault, that is. As you were, Michael, please continue. David Warren.
Andy Lockhead, Villa's centre-forward of yesteryear, passed away, and obviously there were tributes at the Arsenal game before and during the game. Kind of needed a player of his profile against Arsenal, actually. Yeah. Somebody just to get stuck in and get their head on things. He was a uncompromising striker before my time, but a legitimate kind of Villa legend, and if you're a certain age group, you will have fond memories of him. I like this one. They're going to have to extend the season for Villa, aren't they, till like June, July?
I heard they're going to put the Winter World Cup back on account of
something. Yeah, just so Villa can finally try to schedule in the Liverpool game and the Burnley game. Anything else up for
potentially
grabs?
Potentially, there's Palace if they get to the cup final.
Yeah,
that'll go as well.
Because that game is set to be the day after the FA Cup final, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the penultimate weekend, isn't it?
I don't get this. I don't get...
Stupidity.
When you look at Liverpool, for example, and you know, Manchester City, if you're planning fixtures, you would expect those to go deep into the Champions League, potentially deep into the Cups as well. So you must have one eye on that. And I'm talking about, you know, loosely in terms of when fans buy tickets, they obviously, you know, they got jobs, they've got to move things and potentially, you know, if they've got kids, find babysitters, et cetera, et cetera. And this Liverpool game's already moved to two dates and now it's moving to a third date. And this is within a space of literally a couple of weeks.
Yep.
So now, you know, they're selling tickets on the website, but there's actually no date.
Great business modeling.
Yeah. It's like fantastic business model. It's like, well, come on. Surely, you know, you can get a bloody date before you have the gall to try to sell them.
When you look down the possible sort of fixture route that Liverpool have, of course, I think they've got Benfica in the cup, which you'd think over two legs they should get through. If they get through that, you kind of think, when the fuck are we going to play this game?
Yeah.
There's not that many gaps in their midweeks and stuff if they progress in Europe.
Meanwhile, we're still waiting to play Burnley. I think we've got one date locked in. We just need another one. And that also is going to be a struggle to fit in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it'd be midweek home games in May, wouldn't it? We might be playing twice in that last week, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good job we're not actually seriously playing for anything, or else this could be a potential nightmare. If we were fighting relegation or trying to sneak into the European spots, this could really compromise us.
Well, it is kind of good in a way, because we play City and Liverpool right at the end of the season, so we could fuck one of them over, maybe.
I mean, you know, Gerrard, give him a little gift. Let him have Liverpool win the league. I'd probably, because we haven't beaten Manchester City. In the last couple of seasons, we've beaten everybody in that top six apart from Manchester City. So I'd like to have them ticked off.
And to do it in the most painful way properly for them would be the best way to do it as well. Not like, you know, a third round League Cup game. Do it on the last day of the season at their place when they've got a win to.
Yeah. There's a few Grealish well-wishers who would want that as well, I'm sure.
Let the cutthroat mercenary suffer.
It's like a reverse Aguero.
Who would score the goal, though, to win it? Who, Phil? If you're talking about reverse Aguero, what would that be in the Villa terms?
Grealish own goal.
I think it'd have to be McGinn, wouldn't it? His best friend.
Oh,
that would be good for Bantz.
It would be good for Bantz. I reckon Martinez, that'd be quite fun.
Some crotch thrusting afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or just McGinn dressed up as that chicken scoring the winner. Just
a turkey with a header.
Yeah. Just to make it even more ridiculous. I think that's the fixtures covered. We don't have the answers.
No one does.
Premier League don't have the answers. The club don't have the answers. The police don't have the answers either. Speaking of the police, did have a little meeting with them, part of this independent advisory group. I'll put an extra bonus podcast for the Mayo Mensah patrons about that. Some pretty interesting stuff, actually. Oh, it really kicked off Palace and Southampton fans, because Palace were playing Wolves on the same day. In that railway pub near New Street, Palace and Southampton fans ended up in there, and it just went berserk. I think for a full minute, proper punch-up tables flying and took everybody by surprise.
Fucking Crystal Palace and Southampton.
Yeah, bizarre.
What a squaresy fucking bit of hooliganism that is.
Chris, you're in a terrible mood. You've been away. Lots of selfies in Edinburgh. What do you want to talk us through? What went wrong?
What went wrong, Chris? We'll get to the bottom of this. But let's see what's happening in the world of the Battery Hens with the latest Media Muppets. So, Mr. Phil Shaw, what is in the Media Muppet trough this week?
Well, there seems to be a running Coutinho theme. He certainly replaced Grealish in the clickbait inches anyway. Alex Diggin for the Battery Hens of Birmingham Live. And it's the Frankenstein's monster of clickbait articles.
Alex Dickens, incidentally, is the Blues journalist.
Oof, that
master of the clickbait.
That adds to it. The headline is, Wolves are waiting for Aston Villa to trigger the 33 million Philip Coutinho clause. And like, well, why is this in the Villa news? It's just a mess of speculation. It's got nothing to do with Wolves being interested in Coutinho, so everybody can calm down. It says Wolves have a vested interest in the deal. They just don't. It relates to Barcelona signing Adama Traore permanently. The line in it goes, Wolves hope that Villa triggering their option to sign Coutinho will set the wheels in motion for Barcelona to acquire Traore permanently. It's just a tenuous link playing the fact that Barcelona might not have enough money to sign Traore unless Villa buy Coutinho. And that's birthed this like hodgepodge of other articles about the two players. So they just throw in more stuff. Then they go down. It even throws in at the end that Barcelona are considering spending $200 million for Erling Haaland. For fun, it just contradicts everything that went before it.
Yeah, it's just Football Manager knowledge battery henning, isn't it? It's they're eggs that you just wouldn't want for breakfast.
Yeah, and then I mean, to be honest, if Barcelona really wanted Adama Traore, I think the 280 million they're getting from Spotify for sponsorship might just be enough to get that one over the line. But I think you have to give special mention to TalkSport's Twitter admin as well for the freeze frame of the Mings tackle or the Mings pass that Saka ran into, which we'll probably get onto later. To just pick a moment in time and freeze it and then just use that to get engagement.
I mean, everybody throws up still frames of incidents and it's like, well, you just wait for the split second that it fits your narrative, whether you're right or wrong. The whole debate around that, I mean, we'll get on to it later, was farcical. I mean, even at the game, when he saw it, you were like, why is he giving him a yellow for that?
So yeah. Obviously got the ball.
And the fact that he was thinking about the red, it's like, what is this game?
I have no idea.
We will get into that anyway. I mean, the reference to the Battery Hens was, I think it was in the Press Gazette, where one of the regional newspaper companies basically pointed the finger to Reach, which used to be the Trinity Mirror, who run the Birmingham Mail / Live, and another company whose name escapes me, basically accusing them of, with this new scheme they've got, this accelerated personal development pilot scheme, where it basically calls on journalists to hit minimum benchmarks of page views, which, you know, essentially clicks, between 80,000 or 850,000 a month. They've been told they have to have a 70% increase in online page views by the end of this year. Essentially, it's like sales targets, isn't it? This isn't journalism. This is something completely different, and it's quite sad to see that's where it's gone. I don't know if journalism, when you're studying journalism, is what you think it is, what people used to think it is, I don't know if you know you're walking into the clickbait setup now, and those are the parameters, or if you're going in thinking of, the romanticism of being a journalist, and then the reality when you suddenly can't get a job when you come out of doing a degree, and then the only jobs that are offered is just to churn out the clickbait in whatever sector that you're in.
I imagine this new breed of clickbait journalists, you know, like when you're on the motorway and you see like a completely rammed on the battery hen theme, you see a rammed lorry full of sheep on the way to the slaughterhouse. It's a bit like that, isn't it? That they've just sort of created these creatures now to farm out slurry. And it, as I've said before, who's reading it? Because there's nothing to read. It's just complete nonsense.
Yeah, well, you just look at Twitter and that's who's reading it, because everybody's in on the gravy train. There's all these like aggregate Twitter accounts who basically, you know, there's no editorialization there. They'll just take whatever their headline is from the clickbait, put the source and then put it out. And it's just basically to get engagement.
I mean, with the Coutinho thing anyway, everyone knows that Barcelona are going to recall him anyway. So it won't matter.
We'll talk about him a bit later, because his wages, I mean, are still...
He's the only person who'll be able to pay their electric and gas bill in the UK. So do you mind?
That's a good point. But in their most recent financial results, Reach reported that it was on track to double its digital revenue by the end of 2024. So this is the thing. It's like they found this formula. It's not news. The government a couple of years ago, they said there should be a select committee report into this, because this is, it's not news anymore, and it's kind of a danger to society. It's an ugly thing, so we'll see what happens there. Right, on to the 3 points. Point number one, the Deloitte Rich List, which we used to be on once upon a time, I seem to remember. The Deloitte Rich List of football clubs has been released for 2021. Manchester City are now top of the pile. It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even though they are top, is it 56% of their revenue is linked to their owners in some way? So it's all this kind of buyback sponsorship, isn't it? From like the Etihad, the name of the stadium, which is a buyback sponsorship, the whole travel, you know, visit Abu Dhabi, Expo 2020, Dubai. But anyway, enough of them. Villa actually sneaked into the top 20, and AC Milan had a problem with that. What went on there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, AC Milan weren't pleased at being behind the likes of Leicester, West Ham, Wolves and Everton. So the Villa sneaked in the 20th position, but AC Milan complained to Deloitte and said there was an inaccuracy. So Deloitte recalculated the score and put AC Milan in the 19th place, putting Villa down to 21st there. So for a moment, all Christian Perslow's dreams had came true and he was among the 20 richest clubs in the world. But then just like that, it was just snatched away from him.
How the mighty have fallen in Milan.
I can't take this seriously. I look at it. 17th, Wolverhampton Wanderers. 15th, Leicester. 18th, Everton. This isn't like the power elite, is it?
No, and this is the same Deloitte that has a record fine for accounting scandals. So maybe they're adding and taking away, isn't it?
They probably asked AC Milan for some money just to help with that, and then they would bump them up.
I mean, AC Milan and Villa do have something in common, at least, that they've both had dodgy Chinese owners who completely trashed their club's finances. So we can share notes, at least.
Well, I think Villa should be bumped back into the top 20, because I could see in the 19th place Zenit are in there. So we can just cancel them now. Yeah.
Throw them out. Yeah. Throw them all out.
Speaking of Russia and football, point number two, some superb trolling by the Russian Football Federation. The bids have kind of gone in for the Euros. They normally do 2 years at a time, don't they, for World Cups and Euros. So Euros 2028. And 2032. It was initially believed that for 2028 it would be uncontested. At one stage it was only UK plus Ireland as a joint bid was the only one in. And I think at the last moment, Russia suddenly went in and Turkey came in as well. And both Russia and Turkey and Italy have expressed interest in hosting the 2032 one. England's thinking, you probably read this, initially the idea was to go for 2030 World Cup. I mean, they've been desperate for a World Cup. They haven't been able to bring up as much bribe money as the likes of Russia and Qatar to, I'm just telling the truth there.
Yeah. We roll out the royal family instead. Good one.
We think that, Prince William and Beckham turning up at a couple of parties is going to swing the deal.
No, get Andrew out there. He knows what he's doing.
FIFA, are only interested in hard cash in shiny brown paper envelopes. So it's been deemed by the Digital Culture, Media and Sports Committee Chair, Julian Knight, as too expensive. He's dismissed it as a giant expensive vanity project, but...
What do you mean? Like Birmingham having the Commonwealth Games?
Chris, you really... Chris is having a bad day, bad week.
He is, isn't he?
Oh, Chris.
They're just basically being cheapskates, aren't they? And going for... But I don't understand this whole Euro thing. It's so mishmash now. Because didn't we host the final and the semi-finals of the last one?
And we hosted them so well.
We made a great job of that, didn't
we? Flawlessly. Really safe. Really safe and...
Horse flares all around.
You know, there wasn't anything ridiculous like people shoving flares up their ass.
No disabled people
like
trampled.
That. No, of course not. So, Russia will probably get it over the UK and Ireland, despite the fact that they're banned from playing football internationally.
Banned
or
from Western
club
society
football.
In general.
Yeah, but I'm sure, they've got a brown paper envelope in them. Well, maybe not anymore. After these sanctions, they might have some Bitcoin kicking around to outbid the UK and Ireland.
You know UEFA will give it to them as part of their rehabilitation programme.
Ooh, can't see it.
It's hard to think about a European or World Cup while we're on the brink of a world war, never mind a World Cup. Anyway, moving on. Mike Dean, I was going to say, is it moving up or moving down, moving across? Is he taking over VAR or just moving into VAR? What's the story?
Plugging himself in permanently. Like the Matrix or something.
What's happened with Mike Riley?
No, Mike Riley's still in charge, but Mike Dean is making the same move that Lee Mason made last year. He's going to stop on-field refereeing and he's going to permanently be a permanent VAR referee.
Resident of Stockley Park, eh?
Is that where the money is, this VAR refereeing?
I can see there being a turf war though between those two heavy hitters. It's going to get lively in Stockley Park.
Well, at least he isn't going to be on our TV screens like BT Sports resident Peter Walton, because he paid Dean a tribute in the Times, and he says he's not a guy who chases the big time. The big time comes to Mike Dean.
What?
Fuck off.
Mike Dean holds the record, doesn't he, in terms of the Premier League for most red cards given.
He holds all the records.
most red cards given, 114. Most yellow cards, 2,026. And most penalties as well.
Most screen time, probably.
Most goals celebrated against Aston Villa on the field.
Yeah. I mean, there's no need for those handstands at Villa Park when we concede.
And the knee slide was really taking the piss.
Right, anyway, let's move on to Aston Villa's last game. There was obviously no rush to cover it when the result was a negative one and there's an international break, but an intriguing one because it was like a measure of where we are, because Arsenal are a team that we were looking at eagle-eyed only 12 months ago as a team that we could usurp in the pecking order. And here we are looking up at the table and thinking, how the hell did they get up there? And we're, plodding along double figures points behind when last season we were actually above them at one stage, very close to double figures ahead of them while they were struggling at the foot of the table. But it seems that Mr. Arteta has done a better job than Smith and Gerrard combined.
Hmm.
So going into the game, there was a switch. I was quite surprised, actually, obviously being at home as well, to see Buendia come in and him revert back to the Coutinho and Buendia when the Watkins and Ings seemed to be doing all right. What was the reasoning, do you think, for that?
I wonder if he thought he might get a slightly better press, like almost like a three-man press, potentially flood the midfield. So it was almost like a 4-5-1 when you don't have the ball, potentially. I don't know, but it didn't work. You could see from sort of 5-10 minutes in that he thought, hang on a minute, we ain't got this one right, and you could just see it unravelling before us.
I think he needed to sort of counteract Arsenal's midfield, because if you look at it, Arsenal have five players across the middle of the park and there's no real wingers among them or anything else. They're five midfielders. So you have Xhaka and Partey in the middle, then you have Odegaard in front of them, and Smith Rowe and Saka, they could be asked to play in the 10 or in midfield if they needed to. So there's real numbers in that midfield. I mean, five proper midfielders and nobody like hugging the touchline unless that's their game plan for the
although
day.
They did have genuine width on the day because Saka and Smith Rowe did hug the touchline, so it was clearly a ploy to get their two wide players running it, you know, Young and Cash. And then pinned them back.
Well, let's talk about what was happening. I mean, I was quite surprised how high they were pressing us. You're talking about the bodies in midfield, but they were getting forward in terms of pressing Villa, and suddenly we're finding that situation where Martinez is putting out the ball when he's meant to be passing out the back. He's putting it out for a throw-in in his own half. And we were under pressure again, it's the same way as we were pressed like against Manchester City, where it kind of frustrated the crowd and became a little bit embarrassing. But this was a more dynamic, organised Arsenal team. I mean, it was day and night from what we're used to. We've been beating them the last three trips, if you include the friendly that we snuck in last summer. And this was a different beast.
Yeah. Well, it's the best version of Arsenal we've seen in a long time, isn't it? Because for a long time, we and most of the press and most of the clubs, I'm sure, had accused them as being, you know, they've always been nice on the eye, footballing-wise, and very talented, etc., and quite entertaining to watch when they're in full flow. But there was such a soft touch. Which in the game at Villa Park, you saw a team who were actually quite steely and very well organised.
Lots of energy.
You say it's like the best version of Arsenal. You see, I'd say it's the worst because I came away from the game thinking I haven't had my weekend football match. I've watched some sort of fucking Cirque du Soleil or something performance by Arsenal.
What?
I've never seen such a choreographed, you know, effort at influencing the easily influenced referees when they didn't need to. I mean,
well, we'll get on to that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, come on. As you jump in the gun now, as a performance, I thought that was as good as away performances, like professional performance, where you're going, we're going to Villa Park. This is how they're going to line up. This is what we're going to do.
They executed their game plan perfectly.
If we play, yeah, exactly. If we play the way we want to play, we should get the points here. Yeah. And I think I said on the last podcast, Arsenal will be looking at this because they'd be thinking, Villa, you know, starting to wag the tail a bit. Look at, you know, the talent they've bought. This is what you'd consider a marker game.
Yep.
If you're going away to places like Villa and winning, while Villa were in form, then that's a good indication where they are at. So that's why they were pretty happy about, agreed, you know, celebrating or whatever, because it was in the overall picture, it's like, yeah, actually, we're at a certain level now that we're probably above where we expected to be.
I think I know what Phil means. I think that the anger walking away from the game is that the dark arts that Arsenal employed were very, very, I mean, very frustrating. They broke the game.
I thought we were going to talk about that later.
We'll talk about it later. I'm going to talk. That's in the second hour, isn't it, though? but we were football to death, and Arsenal were the most, in terms of footballing style and control, were the most like Man City that I've seen at Villa Park this season. And the thing that really scared me was, the point was made at the beginning about how much of a different beast they were, and how I think Arsenal were behind us last season, and it was frightening how much footballing progress. I mean, it was 90 minutes of football, but they absolutely dictated entire phases of play, particularly in the first half, and we had no response. One comment I'd say about that, though, was I just wish we could see what was happening very early on. I don't know why we waited to make the change. Sometimes, the manager that jumps to mind is a Mourinho would have made a change very early in that game, tactically.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cool.
Okay, let's address that first thing. Yeah, I saw straight away we needed somebody out wide because you could see what they were doing. In the middle of the park, there was no way through the middle of Arsenal. There was absolutely no way through, and we're very narrow in that respect. And you just thought, you can see it straight away. You've got to use the width more. And there was a lot of circumstances where Cash was out there, and he was calling for it, but nobody kind of looked up and stretched them because he was the only width, you know, really that we had. Because Young was being a bit cautious, obviously, because he had Saka to deal with on that side. But what I'll say, the main thing, and you know, if you want to sweep in generalisation, is they looked like they had conviction in everything they were doing, and we didn't. I think Gerrard said we didn't have the belief, and conviction conviction is my word. We looked half-assed. We looked scared. We didn't look like we were completely convinced in what we were doing. And that's scary when you got some of these players, 30 million, you know, Coutinho's even more, and they're not looking like a team that know what they're doing, and they're not looking like a well-drilled team that have confidence. And, you know, even under Smith, and I'm not comparing Smith to Gerrard, I'm comparing the same players, that fear had gone. We were playing Arsenal, we were playing Spurs, we were playing Liverpool, we were having a Manchester United, we're having a go. Like, there was no fear factor. But in this game, we seemed like suffocated, and we just couldn't break out of that and actually get a hold of the game.
I mean, you could see their plan had gone to plan before we even kicked off. They're the first team this season to come to Villa Park and turn us around and make us shoot to the whole end in the first half. And it was almost like the team were like, oh, hang on a minute, this wasn't in the plan. We always shoot to the whole end in the second half. What do we do now?
Yeah.
And you could just sort of see, you know, players who'd played so well ripping through a very informed Southampton team or gone to Leeds, you know, which is a difficult place to go and pulled them to pieces. There's no reason why they shouldn't be confident. And they just, I don't know, they're coward. It was really strange to watch. As you said, Arsenal suffocated them. And I think Gerrard sort of said after the game, we were very passive, lacked a sort of physicality. And, you know, when we did, I suppose this tees us up nicely for the Mings incident, but when we did actually put our foot in, we kind of didn't do it very well. We got rocked
by the dark arts they were playing as well, and we got
they just took all of our momentum out of the game. Yeah. Every time we got the ball, they'd foul us but get away with it. Every time they'd get the ball, they'd allow us to foul them. So it was a very bitty game.
Yeah, as I said, you know, Gerrard said after the game about there was a lack of belief, but you're looking at the same players that have previously played against the likes of Liverpool, Arsenal, Spurs, and, you know, Chelsea, and played without fear and taken points off them. And to see this, it's like we've regressed back to thinking that, oh, Villa are just a mid-table team and, you know, these are free-hit games when actually, you know, we should be mixing it with these boys because somehow if you want to break into the top six, you've got to start beating these teams and actually consider yourself one of them. And by the looks of the last two games, we clearly don't.
It was a bit of an inferiority complex, it felt like. Certainly in the first half, we just stood off and went, whoa, we can't deal with this. And when the goal came, it didn't really come as a massive surprise.
But remember when we played Liverpool and we beat them 7-2? I mean, how can we forget? But we knew we were going to get pressed then. And it was almost like, because we knew there was going to be Liverpool high press, that's how they play. We had a plan for it and we caught them out. Now, recently against Manchester City, we were like, trying to pass it out of the box inside our own 6-yard box. It, you know, we were so pressed back, and it was a similar situation in this. We don't seem to have a clear-cut strategy how to deal with this. And surely Gerrard knows that it's coming.
And it was stupid because on the occasions we actually just put the ball in behind them and made them turn and face their own goal, we actually looked like we could cause some problems. Because I don't think Arsenal are a good side and they're much more organised, but I still think defensively they're still there to be got out at the back, and we didn't really test them too much on the rare occasions we didn't. Watkins hit the post and we had a couple of sort of half chances. You thought, well, why not? You aren't just going to sit back and beat these. Why not just go at them head first?
I think just Villa were just so completely unsettled from the first whistle. It's just like everything, every event in the game just seemed to unsettle the Villa players. They never played a game of football, as we're saying. They'll come off that pitch going, did we even play today? You know, do we even need a, you know, warm down, anything like that?
Yeah. It was the first game, actually, this season that even though there's been games where maybe the players have been accused of being on the beach, I don't believe that's been the case. But it was the first game that even in the stands, it felt like an end of season game. There was just no intensity at all. Like a nice, hot, sunny day, walk into the ground at lunchtime. It all felt very relaxed. Yeah. You get in the ground, the atmosphere was dead, but within about 5 minutes of the kickoff, what atmosphere there was. And there was no intensity on the field. There was no spark from the team to get the crowd going.
And there was something I noticed as well, and I might be reading too much into it, was that Buendia was obviously found himself on the bench after probably reaching the peak of his Villa form a few weeks ago. He's reintroduced here, and I didn't think we saw necessarily the energy or the sharpness that you get through playing regular high-level football.
Well, I mean, look across that midfield.
They all got passed by, didn't they, pretty much?
I mean, Ramsey, all the hype in the week. Oh, he's so close to the England call-up, so close. I've never seen three or four times carelessly gave the ball away when we were under pressure and suddenly we had an out because he got the ball and he passed it straight back.
That is a management issue for me.
It's like, what's going on there?
I think you've got a young, I mean, how old is he, 19? Is he something like that?
He's 20 now, isn't he?
20 now. You know, and I am a believer that younger players, you've got to accept that they will have there'll be a range of form, I suppose, is what I'm saying. But and I do think he's been exposed the last couple of games where, especially well, look at the last game, I think we could have afforded to rotate that and take him out a little bit and give him the opportunity to recover and recuperate. And like you say, it just felt like such a poor performance, didn't it?
I mean, there's the danger, isn't there? This the hype thing where.
I mean, if you look at the hype things.
I mean, as soon as you know, Twitter started talking about Ramsey, England squad, you're just like, oh, can't you, you know, is it all you need now is like a few goals and, you know, six or seven games and you're in the England squad? He needs to prove himself over a season, but also for his own well-being, because, you know, if that performance was based because he's kind of easing off thinking, yeah, I'm the Don now, I'm almost in the England team, and he doesn't think he has to work and, you know, be consistent, then there was evidence there that he's not, you know, he's not close to the England squad, because you can't be giving the ball away that cheaply.
No, if he's going to be judged against his peers, Smith Rowe and Saka, or his peers are the same age as him and the other team.
Well, Smith Rowe was an absolute terror, wasn't he? And you can see all of the qualities that why we're interested, but why Arsenal were so keen to keep hold of him. I think that is the measure, isn't it? That real relentless upward trajectory of being becoming a household name in the Premier League because you do it week in, week out. I think that when you looked across the midfield, you saw players at different form.
Going back to Ramsey, I mean, I think going forward, he is can be sensational, and that's where he's getting all his plaudits from. But one thing we used to say about him originally was a bit casual in the defensive part of his game, and that's still there in terms of the way he gave the ball away. You know, it's kind of what Douglas Luiz had been doing in recent weeks. But it's an underlining thing. If he just becomes a bit more tenacious and, you know, keeps it simple in the defensive side of the game, you know, he will improve immensely as an all-round midfielder, because attacking-wise, I mean, we've seen him where he just goes for it and, you know, goes through about five of the opposition.
We actually needed him to do that more. We needed someone to carry the ball. You know, we actually had two wingers sat on the bench who didn't come on for, was it about the last 20 minutes or so, when really Arsenal were kind of just holding us at arm's length at that point. I just think we got our plan. Our plan was wrong. And we didn't execute whatever plan was there. And
I think Arsenal, attitude as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think we couldn't get a foot in the game. And I think Arsenal probably got wind quite quickly. And Arteta's maybe a bit more streetwise than we give him credit for because of how poor Arsenal were last season. But he knew how to negate our threat. We never even looked like we were going to be a threat. The only time we were when we got a free kick on the corner of their penalty area. What was it, the fifth minute or fourth minute of injury time, and Martinez went up? And you thought this would, in years gone by, this would be where Arsenal fuck up and drop the points, which is a sign of their progress. Because last year or the year before, they would have probably lost that game.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, 10 minutes ago, you thought, actually, if we could still draw this game. I mean, it'll be a shocking result in terms of how the fuck did we get away with that one? because we should have been hung, drawn and quartered. But
these are the games, these are the ones you've got to do, haven't we? We've said it all year. There's not been that many times where we've managed to play badly and get a result. And that's something that Smith had last year. We haven't been able to grind this year.
Because, you know, we've only got three draws. And this would be an example of one where if we'd, let's say, been a bit more dynamic and had more of an attitude where Arsenal, you know, they're going into this going, it's going to be a battle to get anything out of these, you know, these at their own patch. If that was the general demeanour of playing Villa, then, and we scored, you know, 10 minutes to go, got an equaliser, then that's how you get, you know, that would be classed as a typical draw. Probably didn't deserve it, but, you know, we got it. But we're not getting those results.
It's not like we didn't create in the last few minutes. So that's a good point, actually. I mean, I still don't quite know what Traore was trying to do at the end of the game, where there was a couple of balls.
It's a free header, wasn't it, in the back post?
It was frightening, really, for a professional. But we were creating, and, you know, Arsenal, those final few minutes where they were essentially hoofing the ball. I can remember a couple of them getting hoofed into the Doug Ellis, you know, where I thought, well, you know, but you thought, where was this head of steam the whole of the second half? Where was it when, you know, why weren't we trying to take the initiative, as I think you were just saying, Chris, earlier on? Because we gave them absolutely nothing to think about whatsoever in the first half. And why did we wait till the 90th minute to, I mean, one shot on target against an Arsenal team that, as you say, there are some frailties at the back. And of course, they didn't have their first choice keeper.
Their goalie had barely played all season. Surely you'd be thinking, shoot on sight in the first 15, 20 minutes. Just get at him, put him under pressure, put the ball in the box.
A bit dodgy as well. So, it's a bit of a strange one.
Start of the game, what was it, Phil?
Start of the game is Manchester United are still the only one of... I know. They're still the only one of the current top eight sides that Villa have taken any points from.
I mean, last season was a different matter, wasn't it?
You had Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal twice, Spurs, Leicester at the time.
Yeah, strangely, that was, despite where we finished last season, the main bullish thing about the season was we were beating those teams, and you think mentally that just sets you up. You're going to go into games now, going head to head, toe to toe, but we've regressed back to where we used to be.
Well, strange, actually, Arsenal are the only side in the league who've drawn as few games as Villa this season.
That's because they've been winning.
Yeah. Although I would say, in terms of our improvement,
we've been losing.
I did see after the game that we conceded 20 in our first 11 under Smith. We've actually conceded 20 in 18 under Gerrard, including only 5 in the last 7. So defensively, we have improved. It always just seems like one step forward, two steps back, one step forward, two steps back through the season.
Because we were talking, like, when we won after the terrible run, when we won 3 on the bounce, and it was all like unicorns, rabbits and rainbows for our attacking, because we'd banged in, was it 9 in 3 games? And you're looking at that West Ham and Arsenal game, and you're thinking, well, the forward line just hasn't got the conviction, despite the talent on display. It's kind of a strange one.
Seems like a simple equation to me. I think if Villa's midfield click, they stand a pretty good chance of winning the game, but there's a fair chance that they won't click at the moment. It's kind of a 50-50 chance at the moment.
I just don't think Villa can handle the mental game. I mean, that's what the point I was trying to make with the orchestrated Arsenal performance. I mean, any decision, you had at least 5-6 Arsenal players surrounding the referee. Yeah. The referee literally couldn't play advantage because he would have to push Arsenal players out
usually
of the way
one of them
to
being
carry on refereeing the game. Yeah, I mean, it was just, that's what has changed about the Arsenal team from previously. I mean, it's drilled into them.
It's
back
to the way they used to be, Smith, when they had sort of Vieira in the refs ear constantly. Lacazette, whenever there was a decision to be made, Lacazette would be in his ear. On a few occasions, the ref told him to do one, but because the ref didn't get on top of that early in the game, he let them get away with it, and a little bit of time wasting. And now, they were very easy to go down, not that we can say much because of, you know.
It's funny how the away team has been influencing the... I mean, we were talking about referees just this day and age don't seem to have a control of the game. They don't seem to have the authority of the overall game with all the time wasting we've been witnessing. But it seems to be like the away teams are ruling the roost on the ref, when really you should be coming to Villa Park. The home crowd should be so intense that that has a bearing on the ref.
Just isn't, is it?
And the players, the home players, should be getting in their face, but it's not intense at all, is it?
I find it amazing how much shit the referees take, you know, and it does seem to be a problem in football, really, that you think you look across other sports, you know, the obvious ones, rugby and whatever, but many sports, the officials get absolutely no shit, you know. And the really annoying thing about it is Arsenal actually didn't need to do any of that in order to get their victory at Villa Park.
No.
But you can see the advantage. The advantage is that it's the naivety as much as the officials that really winds me up.
But you know the tradition why home advantage is home advantage, yeah. Because the home crowd influence the referee, because they know if they give that decision, it's going to get, you know, 30,000-40,000 is going to give them shit. And it's a subconscious thing, and that plays into that kind of home advantage as well as, you know, the effect of the crowd on the players. But
that opens the other elephant in the room about the Villa Park atmosphere, I'm afraid, as well, that it's a bit...
Because the only time it lifted was to bag out Saka, who I actually thought had a really good game, to be fair to him, and to bag out the ref.
Yeah, and they need a bad guy. You know, it's not...
It's not pro-Villa.
There's always the attempt to get the Steven Gerrard's Claret Blue Army going, normally in the second half when they try to, you know, need to raise the spirits, which is... And that's normally the upper halt doing that. And that's fair enough, but you just hope... When it just starts to die out, you just say, oh, I just wish this would go on and get louder, because that is the point where you know...
That's
actually
how it used to be.
But then again, I just, this is like deja vu to me. I just remember, go back 5-7 years, same issues, same things on social media. How do we get the atmosphere back at Villa Park? You know, how do we get it? It's just the same old shit.
There is an apathy, unfortunately.
And then the funny thing, you know, my friend in LA went to see LAFC and sent me some videos. I mean, I can put these up on Instagram. Behind the goal, it's like fucking madness. You know, flags, fucking drums, everything's going mad through the middle of the game. You know, flags being waved, everything. But then there's that argument. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. Because you're doing something that's actually not reliant on what's happening on the pitch. You are creating the own atmosphere.
Like abroad, isn't it?
Supporters are creating something. They're not just there to turn up to get a couple of drinks, have a pie, and then piss off with 10 minutes to go.
Well, consumers.
I want my glass of mate. Is it mate?
Yeah.
Mate.
Yeah, we've both been to games in Italy, and they are... That is the epitome of home advantage. When you go and see an Italian side play at home, you go to the San Siro or Juve or wherever.
Well, Germany, yeah. I would say Germany's... Italy used to be. Italy's faded a bit. Yeah. But the English, there is a train of thought where the English go, you don't need all the fucking flags and drums and shit. You know, you just have your voices. And that's the old school. I think it's... I don't know if it's my generation and above, like the spoil sports of this situation. Because it's not the English way and it's frowned upon, but, you know, well, what's this way that's happening now? It's just fucking boring with a capital B.
It was against Arsenal. That was the thing. I really didn't enjoy that afternoon. I mean, I remember I probably foolishly had hyped that game up, thinking it had the potential to be a really good game. But actually, because Arsenal were in so much control, I found it a really boring watch.
Yeah, well, I did warn you. I mean, there was other people that were bigging up. I said, I'm looking forward to this one. This is going to be great. I said, nah, it's going to be fucking 1-0.
I think more positive news, Mikel Arteta is now one of my most hated people, just for his side of the pitch antics and very...
He was never in his dugout zone. He was always on the edge of the bloody pitch.
He's feeling and the
arm waving and...
The fourth official or whatever was right next to him, and he should have pulled him back. Gerrard never stepped out of his technical zone. Arteta was right out of it, on the edge of the pitch.
But he was part of the theatre as well. Like, take the Mings tackle, for instance. He was part of the theatre where, you know, that's how it all combines to end up in this situation where we're all sat there going, he's gonna fucking send him off, you know. And you think, how have we got from any number of occasions where Arsenal players, like the one where Lacazette goes down like he's been snipered after McGinn bumps into him.
I mean, McGinn gave him a very good shove, didn't he, during that Mings incident? Yeah. McGinn was probably lucky to stay on the pitch for that, because you've seen
The Mings incident, like when I remember when I was, I mean, this is going back a bit, when I was 9 or 10, I was about 10, I used to play centre-back for the school team and made a tackle where I got the ball clean and took out the opposition's player, no problem, you know, play on. I got the ball 100%. And I remember my manager after the end of the game said, great tackle. And it said, it doesn't matter if you break the other player's leg, as long as you get the ball.
That's the spirit.
And
that was always in my mentality. That is a tackle. If you get the ball, you could kill the other player. It doesn't matter.
We should get that, you know, on we occasionally have the fold out banner from the Holt End. We should have that written on it.
Take the ball and the man. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
so it used to be basically the rule, didn't it?
Yeah, but it depends what referee you have, whether it's still the rule or not. We're only two seasons past Ben Mee, you know, ending Wesley's career for all intents and purposes with that exact same thing with the ball then man. I mean, his is completely different because he was in midair when he did it and wiped Wesley out. But, you know, I mean, and that's what I'm saying. And another, if that had been an Arsenal player doing that tackle, this is what I firmly believe. I mean, Villa's players wouldn't have jumped off the bench and nothing else. It would just been playing. Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't a tackle. If you look at the phase of play, it was a pass.
Yeah, it wasn't
a tackle.
Not.
He knew the ball needed to get to Ashley Young, so he went right flat footed straight in.
But Mings actually, by the time he touches the ball, Saka's nowhere to be seen, and it's just after. And normally, most players jump over that.
Saka's playing for contact, so he gets what he deserves in that sense. And also,
his ankle for trying to simulate a foul, doesn't
he? Yeah, you look at Mings's body shape.
This isn't bias. He's so low, and the weird thing is, gives a yellow, and then you see it on that Sky clip that's been doing the round two fucking drips, talking about, oh, do you think you should have had a red card? Never mind the red card. He shouldn't have had a yellow card.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have got that yellow card. That yellow card was basically the referee covering his ass.
They're desperate. And I think that's the element now, that you've got to a situation with VAR where it's almost like we need to find a decision, or we need to, you know, and you've got this punditry that's furiously wanking at the idea of Mings being sent off, or that Mings is, done wrong. And actually, what you know, notwithstanding some of the, I think, unfair comments about Saka, you know, the fact is that there was two or three instances of blatant simulation that have gone completely ignored for him, you know, and others in that team. Yeah. And we don't talk about that. And that's not part of the game. Arsenal don't need to do that. That's a part of the game that's not desirable at all.
Unfortunately, like, VAR came in and you're thinking, right, that's going to sort out the offsides, that's going to make sure that no dubious penalties, it's going to sort out the diving, jobs are good, and doesn't need any overthinking, really, just need that technology in place. Bonus, you got a few people looking at screens that can feed into the ears of the ref just to correct any mistake they've made. So from that point where it's like, it's sorted, lads. Everything's good. It's just, it's gone backwards. It's now at a state where nobody knows what's going on. There's too many chefs in the bloody kitchen. The horse is bolted in terms of trying to sort out the refereeing and the officiating, whether it's on, video or
it's paralyzed
on the pitch.
Them. They're unable to make a decision now. That's my view.
And they really need to sit down, because some kind of VAR light, but the fundamental rule that seems to have been thrown out the window was the clear and obvious, which clear and obvious is never used anymore.
Well, it's used when sort of the decision.
Yeah.
I mean, that you won't tell me that referees aren't sort of leaning towards the top six just on those sort of borderline decisions. Not even borderline decisions, just anything that they scream for, they get.
You could say that's a lazy conspiracy theory. Burning question. I was asked by the BBC to say where Villa would finish this season and how many points. I went in with 49 and finished ninth. And the justification was, we have to play Manchester City, Liverpool, Spurs, and it's unlikely we're going to claw back that 10 points that Wolves are above us, even though we've got a game in hand and we've got to go to Molineux, because obviously, Wolves are going to win games as well. We're currently level on points with Leicester. And I said, as long as we don't get beat at Leicester, because they've got, they got reasonably hard games as well. Plus, they've got European commitments. So they'll probably concentrate on that European situation because, they're not much to play for in the league. So that should be enough to hold them out. I did the whole predictor thing as well. So, ninth was my prediction, and I think overall most Villa fans would be happy with that. And Gerrard could pass it off, and Persley could pass it off as progress. I mean, so the burning question is, would you be happy with ninth, and do you think that's where we will finish?
I'd be, very happy with ninth. I think we might finish lower than that, if I'm honest, just because I think there's a lot of teams in that batch. I think if we were to finish ninth with our running, you'd go, you've done really well there. It would probably mean we'd have to get results against teams we haven't looked like getting results against yet.
You say that, but really, it literally is only, we've got Wolves is a tough one, but then it's like, we've got games against Palace, two against Burnley, Leicester away, you fancy yourself 50-50 with them. So there's enough games, and I did the prediction thing, and the two teams around us obviously at the moment are like Leicester, Southampton, and they've got games that they're not going to win. So it's a lot of it's down to self-destruction of other teams. But as long as we, and I think I put us down against Burnley, like one, a draw and a win.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think the key game is that Leicester game. As long as we don't, if we get beat there, then we're probably going to finish 10th.
Because haven't Leicester got two games on us as well?
Yeah, and that's another problem. But there's that European, you're balancing up with the European commitment. So mm-hmm. there's an extra two games in Europe already, I think, against PSV.
Right. I think we'll finish 10th.
And they've got tough ones. So, but yeah, I was, put it this way, I was surprised when I did that predictor table that we finished up 9th, because I was thinking, yeah, I think it's going to be 10th or, 11th.
I mean, ultimately, anything higher than 11th from last year is, you'd consider it progress. I think 10th would be the minimum. 9th is the best we're going to get anyway. So you'd like to finish 9th. Everyone would be content with it.
I think from where we were at the point at which Smith was sacked, and that, you know, again, looking beyond the prism of one game against Arsenal, I think the whole mentality changed. You know, there's a lot of work for Gerrard to do. Don't get me wrong. And there's still plenty to prove.
It is interesting because we did think we were getting to that point where, right, we're on the next step now to step into attacking with intent, that kind of top six, that top eight. But now we're a bit more reserved in terms of our outlook, aren't we, in terms of we might need a summer rebuild.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, that's a symptom of the modern game, isn't it? And I think that you look at how Arsenal were playing, you look at how the top teams play. I mean, even Man United, who have by their standards had a poor season, you look at the points tallies, and you've got to go on long unbeaten winning runs in this division to really transcend into that top part of the division. And you've got to have
unbeaten, at least.
Well, when you look at the run that Wolves have had.
Well, and look at, Leicester have to be a team that it's a good measure. You know, you look at this, they've had some injuries, I know, and some poor form and some poor results that's put Rodgers under a little bit of pressure. But, you know, you've got to get into a mentality that you can be in and around that top six and eight. And then you start to say, well, hey, how do we break into the top part of the division? It's the top table of English football, isn't it? And in this modern era, it's all about, look at some of the players in those squads. You know, I know Chelsea is going to go through some flux now. Come the summer, you're going to have the problem of your Newcastles throwing money around. And of course, then you're looking at your Liverpools, Man United's and Man City's. You've got no God-given right to enter into it, but you've got to be superb to do it.
I do this weekly talking point thing for the BBC website. And this one, I was talking about the hidden pressure on Gerrard. Because exactly what you said about, you know, the goal is obviously break into Europe, but the established top six teams in terms of players, wealth, it's not easy to crack. Then you've got Newcastle on the up. But you've got this pressure now where after next season, they'll start the rebuild of the North Stand. That's going to go up to over 50,000. Let's, for argument's sake, call it 55,000. Season ticket holder list of around 20,000. Mid-table football's not going to sustain that because Villa fans are kind of fickle. I mean, the honeymoon period of the new owners and everything and the razzmatazz is going to start to turn into mid-table reality. So there is that kind of, the clock is ticking to a certain extent that Villa do, there is that pressure. They have got to make indents and actually convince supporters that they are actually in it for real. But at the same time, it's not easy. And I reason this is the hardest job Steven Gerrard will have in his managerial career.
I agree.
Yep.
I mean, if we won the FA Cup tomorrow and that was enough to get him the Liverpool job, the Liverpool job's going to be easier because the infrastructure's there. They're already in the top fucking four teams or whatever. But to get Villa from where we are and where we've been to that level again, that's one of the hardest jobs in football, as far as I'm concerned, to break that elite six or so. I mean, you got six and then there's like two or three real elite clubs. You've got to throw Chelsea in there at the moment just because of their, you know, they've won the European Cup recently.
And the huge pressures that come alongside it are not just the expectation that many fans will, many supporters will have with all this, you know, this building sense of progress, or this is certainly what we're trying to project, is that Gerrard will have to perform with whatever players that can be assembled around it, knowing that they're going to have to be, you know, you've stuck the flag in the sand, if you like, with a Coutinho type signing. You've got to surround players like Coutinho with with world-class players.
Well, we'll talk about this more in the extra show, the Mad Few Q&A, because there's conversations about Coutinho in terms of next season, and this we don't want to be repeating ourselves. You know, we'll also do an after-hours show where we'll just talk about a couple of other themes that we've kind of touched on as well. Before we go, I just want to give a shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons as well, and a big thanks to both Tom Priest and also Dane Bertelson for signing up as a My Old Man Said patron. Thank you very much. Please do go if you want to support the show and get access to the extra shows we just mentioned and also Match Club. Please do go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the patron link for details there. Also, please do make sure you're following us if you're listening on Apple or Spotify. Make sure you subscribe or follow or whatever they call it, and sign up for notifications for when the shows pop. Do you have any final words, gents?
Finished the album yet, Chris?
Very quiet.
It's frustrating him, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's getting to him now.
His whole demeanour, he's not a happy chappy.
I'm hoping he'll sample some of my vocals. But he never replies to my emails.
All in the name. I can't afford you, Dale. I'm under the budget. All in the name of continual progress, though, eh?
Yes, exactly. That's the spirit. That's the spirit.
All right, when's the next game? Well, I think we'll put a show out before a show in some shape or form before the Dogheads. There'll definitely be something for the weekend. Could test the Dogheads, but there's another. I mean, this is three games where you could expect win, lose or draw against West Ham, Arsenal and Wolves, but we're not standing there with three losses to our names, because then you're thinking, well, there's the evidence.
No Neves for Wolves though, moving forward. Ooh. Which is a big loss for them, because he has been probably their player of the season.
There's no Martinelli for Arsenal though, was there?
Or Ramsdale.
There was not.
Anyway, let's go off and record some extra shows for the patrons. So until the Dogheads, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ciao.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.